Good afternoon, everybody. My title today, get right to it here, Lessons from Daniel in Babylon, Part 1. Sometime in the future, there'll be Part 2. You could begin turning to the book of Daniel. Most of us are familiar with the prophet Daniel, how he survived being thrown into the lion's den, how his friends survived the fiery furnace, and of course his prophecies, including Nebuchadnezzar's dreams and the writing on the wall. And perhaps you read an article written by Mitch Moss, that may have been a year and a half ago now, appeared in the United News. Article was titled, "Our World Looks More Like Babylon Every Day," and had a subheading, "Three Lessons from the Life of Daniel." Good article. If you hadn't read it, I'd encourage you to do so. Today, much like that article did, I wanted to begin looking at Daniel from the standpoint of a man who lived almost his entire life as an exile in a foreign culture, a culture that was opposed to God, a culture that served a false God. And then notice how he coped and how he conducted himself within that culture. Because living as he did in that society, Daniel's provided us with numerous examples and lessons for us today as we find ourselves living in a culture that is becoming increasingly foreign to us, opposed to God, and even hostile to our Christian values. Back in the 1950s, the United States of America actually adopted the national motto, "In God We Trust." But in the years since, there's been a gradual and perhaps even accelerating shift away from that motto. And America has certainly been transformed over the last 8 years of the Obama administration. Perhaps the election of Donald Trump may temporarily slow this acceleration or transformation, but just in the course of my lifetime, things have changed a lot. We've witnessed not only the legalization of abortion, but when was it, a little over a year ago or so, they had the Planned Parenthood's videos done kind of surreptitiously showing the commerce and the baby, or the attempts to commerce and baby body parts. Maybe they're actually doing it. We've seen the Supreme Court legalize same-sex marriage. Businesses are being demonized, even penalized for declining to participate in gay weddings. Entertainment has changed a lot. Music, things are openly coarse and vulgar. Entertainment markets a strange culture to our kids as well. Violent video games, the vampire romance knowledge, and I guess there's television shows about this too, and the witchcraft, the sorcery, the popularity, the Harry Potter movies. I see where Disney's doing a remake of the animated Beauty and the Beast movie. I saw where the movie's director announced in a recent interview that the movie will contain, I'm quoting here, a nice, exclusively gay moment between two male characters. Then we have the gender identity issues involving restrooms and locker rooms, and you choose what gender you feel most comfortable with at the time. These are strange times. And even though this is the country where most of us have grown up, we sometimes feel like strangers in a strange land. And we even find ourselves coping with things and some issues that would probably even seem strange in ancient Babylon. Going back to Daniel, now Daniel was carried away to a foreign culture, and he learned to live as an exile in ancient Babylon. We, on the other hand, have had a foreign culture brought upon us and must learn to live as exiles in a spiritual Babylon. Today we'll start by reading through the first two chapters of the book of Daniel. And as we do, I'll point out 10 quick lessons for us. So Daniel, chapter 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, it's about 606 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Now, at this time, Babylon was expanding its empire and gaining its wealth by very brutally and violently enslaving and plundering the nations around it. During the siege of Jerusalem, it appears that Nebuchadnezzar was actually a co-ruler with his father, Nabopolassar. Nabopolassar died about a year later, and Nebuchadnezzar became Babylon's supreme ruler for the next 43 years. Verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he, Nebuchadnezzar, carried into the land of Shinar, a term which designates the Euphrates Valley region in which Babylon was located, to the house of his God, and he brought articles into the treasure house of his God. Now, the God's not named in the Bible, but according to some other sources here, the God, it's called Marduk, M-A-R-D-U-K. For a little more background, I went to Haley's Bible Handbook, and it says that the great temple of Marduk, or Bel, B-E-L, was the most renowned sanctuary in all the Euphrates Valley. It contained a golden image of Bel and a golden table, which together weighed not less than 50,000 pounds. At the top were golden images of Bel and Ishtar, two golden lions, a golden table 40 feet long and 15 feet wide, and a human figure of solid gold 18 feet high. It's interesting to note the prophet Isaiah, you can just jot it down to reference here, in Isaiah 14:4, actually refers to Babylon as the golden city, so you could understand why. Daniel 1, verse 3. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. Here we'll stop again to gain a little more background about the city and the environments that these captives were being brought into. Reading again from Haley's Bible Handbook, Babylon was brought to the zenith of its power and glory in the days of Daniel by Nebuchadnezzar, who during his 45-year reign never wearied of building and beautifying its palaces and temples. His palace, into which Daniel often went, was one of the most magnificent buildings ever erected on the earth. Its vast ruins were uncovered by the archaeologist Robert Coldaway between the years 1899 and 1912. Sort of a side note, my wife and kids and I in 2007 visited Germany, and we were in Berlin, and we visited the Pergamon Museum. And we actually saw the artifacts taken from Coldaway's excavation of Babylon, including entire walls and a huge arched gate. The Ishtar Gate was reconstructed in the museum. And it was very impressive. You've probably seen pictures of it in some of the church's publications. Haley further writes, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, built supposedly by Nebuchadnezzar for his Median queen, who's not mentioned in the Bible, but was, Haley says, the beautiful daughter of Syaxerxes, who helped Nebuchadnezzar's father conquer Nineveh when Babylon was coming to power. The gardens were built, Haley continues, on several tiers of arches, one over another, each bearing a solid platform 400 feet square, terraces covered with flowers, shrubs, trees. Underneath in the arches were luxurious apartments, the pleasure ground of the palace, built while Daniel was the chief governor of the wise men of Babylon. So to summarize, Babylon, Haley says, was a city of extravagance and wicked luxury beyond imagination, unsurpassed in the history of the world. So there's a description of the society that Daniel is being brought into. But I also wanted to note that Babylon's ruler, Nebuchadnezzar, has been described as an arrogant, egotistical leader who had inherited tremendous wealth, gained control of vast amounts of real estate, and prided himself in his building accomplishments and for making Babylon great. Almost tempted to add in again, because there was an earlier Babylon. Verse 5. And the king appointed them, these specially selected young men from Judah, a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now there are a number of things to notice in this verse. The king's delicacies probably refers to foods that were only available to the elite members of Babylonian society and probably considered very tasty and desirable. And by saying that he didn't want to defile himself, Daniel gives a clear impression that the king's delicacies must have included some unclean meats. But we also notice that Daniel mentions not wanting wine. Now, there's nothing unclean about wine. The only objection God would have to wine would be the overconsumption or disproportionate consumption of it. So it appears that wine might have been the only beverage prescribed to go along with all the meals, when, as we know, it would probably be a lot healthier just to drink water. Verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king, afraid of getting his head cut off if he disobeyed. So here's one of the first indications that Nebuchadnezzar was not a very reasonable ruler. Verse 11, so Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. I've recently become familiar with the Whole 30 diet, and maybe this is a variation of it, the Whole 10. Verse 13, then let our appearance be examined before you in the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this manner and tested them 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So here, this brings me to lesson number one. Avoid the junk food delicacies of Babylon. Avoid the junk food delicacies of Babylon. Our diet's important. Don't be influenced by the eating habits of our overindulgent society around us. And this involves more than just avoiding unclean meats. Daniel asked for water instead of wine. God allows for the consumption of wine, but in proper amounts. But just because God doesn't say, don't eat this, doesn't mean that you should eat as much as you want of it. What we eat and how much of it does matter on both a physical and a spiritual level. We've got cardiovascular disease, we've got type 2 diabetes, and a host of other diseases that are related to our junk food culture. And it's a culture that includes way too many refined carbohydrates and way too many sugary delicacies. And coming out of this kind of a culture has been an issue, even for some of us in the church. Diet's important to our health, and it's difficult to be a good servant if you're not healthy. Verse 16, thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. So does this mean they became vegetarians or that we should be vegetarians? Well, not necessarily. Why not? You can look later in the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 10, verses 2 to 3. Daniel describes a special period of time when he was trying to understand a message from God. Daniel chapter 10, verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food. No meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled, which indicates that at the end of those 3 weeks, he did consume pleasant food, meat and wine. So, no, Daniel wasn't a vegetarian. Going back to chapter 1, verse 17, as for these 4 young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, at the end of these days, at the end of 3 years of training, when the king had said they should be brought in, the servant of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. God blessed their training. He multiplied the knowledge and the skill they obtained, and he granted them additional wisdom and understanding. So lesson number 2. Don't neglect to develop your talents. Even if you're in Babylon, even if you're in a Babylonish society, Daniel and his friends took full advantage of their educational opportunities, even though it was within a Babylonian system. And they did so without being corrupted by it, although it probably wasn't easy. They had to sort out good instruction from bad. As we've already noticed, they had to reject Babylonian ideas about what constitutes a healthy diet. But as we'll notice in other verses, they must have accepted good, valid instruction that helped them later in serving in the governmental administrative positions. A related question that sometimes comes up, should we send our children to public schools? And I would say that depends. Depends upon the specific school, its teachers, its students, how closely a parent can monitor what's happening there, and also, perhaps most importantly, how good a foundation our kids have been provided with at home. Have we as parents laid the groundwork of instruction about God? Have we prepared them to recognize right from wrong and what's right and wrong in the eyes of God? Even if our kids do attend a public school, we still have to be homeschool parents. obviously Daniel and his three friends had somehow gotten such a foundation and were thoroughly grounded in the ways of God. My own kids seem to have benefited greatly by attending public schools. I mean, we did start them out homeschooling first year or two. But they received a lot of good instruction that we could not have provided them within a homeschool situation. It would have been very difficult for us as homeschool parents to match the instruction they received in subjects like physics, technology, microelectronics, robotics, even the choir, the orchestra, and the band were pretty good at the public school. However, they did attend a relatively good, safe school with good teachers, good peer groups, etc. And you don't necessarily find this in all public schools. Anyway, Daniel and his friends were blessed in their training, even in a Babylonian system. Verse 21, thus Daniel continued in Babylon until the first year of King Cyrus, a time span of 65 to 70 years. Chapter 2, verse 1. Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said to them, I've had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. Evidently, he didn't remember it. Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, then we'll give you the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision's firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you'll be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made an ash heap. Lesson number 3. Be prepared to deal with people in authority who make totally callous and unreasonable edicts. Or expect to deal with difficult people in this society. You might remember the Oregon Labor Commissioner. At the time, he fined the couple who owned the Gresham Bakery, I think it was like $170,000 for not wanting to bake a cake for a gay wedding. That would fit in that category. As our nation moves further away from a trust in God, people in authority seem to feel no accountability to a higher power when they make decisions like these. They may act without any kind of logic or conscience or compassion for people under their authority. Verse 6. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants a dream, and we will give its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know for certain that you'd gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there's only one decree for you. For you've agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, then I'll know you can give me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there's not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It's a difficult thing that the king requests. There's no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not in the flesh. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree went out and they began killing the wise men. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree from the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time, that he might tell the king the interpretation. And Daniel went to his house, made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning the secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Brings us to lesson number 4. Ask others for help in praying for your concerns. Ask others for help in praying for your concerns. In numerous instances, Daniel prayed by himself, but for some matters, he asked his friends to pray with him. Never underestimate what can be accomplished when friends pray for each other. A related lesson, lesson number 5, stay connected with God's people. Stay connected with God's people. As much as possible, associate with, fellowship with, and build relationships with God's people. Being isolated in a foreign culture is difficult. Physical, the moral, the spiritual support of the brethren can be vital in helping us resist the bad influences that are in the culture around us. Never intentionally try to be a solitary Christian. Occasionally you might hear someone say, I don't need to attend a church service to be close to God. I can feel close to God when I'm out communing with nature, out in the forest. I had a neighbor who used to say that. And I suppose there are times when that could be true, but if we consistently choose solitude and intentionally separate ourselves from the brethren, that's a problem. I realize sometimes we have our differences, and we can sometimes be irritable or irritating. I know I have at times, and those of you who've had patience with me, thank you. Yeah, but practice patience. And don't use these as excuses, or don't use these kind of issues as an excuse to disconnect from God's people. Verse 19. Then the secret of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven, and their prayers were answered. And Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers." Lesson number 6. Always give thanks and praise to God. Never forget the source of your blessings, or to say thank you when your prayers are answered. Continue in verse 23. You, O God, have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's demand. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I'll tell the king the interpretation." Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, "I found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king has demanded, and the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, this secret was not, or has not, been revealed to me, because I have more wisdom than anyone living. But for our sakes, who make known the interpretation to the king, that you may know the thoughts of your heart. Lesson number 7, stay humble. Don't take credit for things that God accomplishes through you. Stay humble. Don't take credit for things God accomplishes through you. It would have been easy for Daniel to take credit and to promote himself. And look at how I've interpreted this, Nebuchadnezzar. But he didn't. Reading on verse 31, Daniel now tells the dream, or what the dream was, and how to interpret it. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, and stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron, partly of clay. You watched while the stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, and the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings. For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. But after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours, then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, and they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that broken pieces, the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. Now, it's not my intent to go into the historic and prophetic implications here, but notice Nebuchadnezzar's response. Verse 46, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering and incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal the secret. Lesson number 8. We can bear witness of the true God and even his plan here. We can bear witness of the true God. God can use us to bring people to him, or at least give people a better understanding of who the true God really is. One of God's purposes for Daniel in Babylon appears to be as a witness to Nebuchadnezzar. For many of us in the workplace, issues with working on the Sabbath, the holy days, They require us to answer questions that do come up. But they also give us opportunities to explain our understanding of God and His plan. Then, too, we can be a light and a blessing. May not come right away, but eventually people will notice that the faith that we live by makes life easier for people around us, or it should. Verse 48. Then the king promoted Daniel, gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Also Daniel, and notice this, petitioned the king. And he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king, evidently a higher administrative position. So lesson number 9, don't forget your friends. Don't forget to help those who've helped you. Always thank your friends for their help. And if you're in a position to help them, by all means do so. Brings up lesson number 10 also. Couldn't think of a real good way to state this one, but I just said, it's okay to serve in high governmental positions if we don't compromise our values. Notice that Daniel and his friends served as rulers in the government of Babylon, and as such, they could have positive impact on the lives of others. However, we should also notice that Daniel and his friends were appointed to their positions. They did not seek offices. They were not into the politics of trying to get elected or trying to promote themselves or trying to put themselves ahead or trying to get themselves selected. We might have a tendency to ask, though, why should we even try to improve or even be involved with the workings of our present, rather times corrupt governmental system? When we know that that system's going to fail, we know the prophecies. Well, so did Daniel. He just finished interpreting one of those prophecies. He knew that Babylon would fall. But that didn't stop him from serving in the Babylonian government. And apparently, God had a purpose for him in doing so. Well, that finishes chapter 2. And as we review it and reflect on Daniel's life in a strange country, we notice how he coped. And also that God worked a great purpose through him there. Likewise, as our society continues to change around us, I might even say spirals downward, let's remember that God has given us not only the means to cope, but He's also given us a great purpose and many things to accomplish, even as spiritual exiles in Babylon. So let's allow God to work that purpose in us.